Take the roll, please.
Councilmember Eugene Connors?
Here.
Councilmember Joan Hanson?
Here.
Councilmember Shirley Dowdy?
Present.
Mayor Ronald Burley?
Here.
Councilmember Anna Klein is excused. Councilmember Douglas Dunn?
Here.
Councilmember Serena Sullivan?
Here.
City staff Richard Marsh, City Manager Ashley Coronado, City Clerk Carrie Bagley, Interim Finance Director Sandy Braddock, Public Works Director Aldo Orduño, City Attorney.
Thank you very much for the invocation. Let us turn our thoughts to the people living in North Africa, the Middle East, and Central Asia who are suffering from violence, war, hunger, and destruction of entire neighborhoods and cities. And so for these innocent people, let's have a moment of silence. Thank you. Let us stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. We have a few announcements and a certificate of appreciation to hand out tonight. So we'll get started. Certificate of appreciation. This certificate is presented to Charlene Snooty Borowick in recognition of dedicated service to the City of Bisbee's Evergreen Cemetery for the last 14 years, dated this fourth day of October, 2016. Snooty, would you want to come up? Second announcement, without objection from the council staff, has requested item number 5 to be pulled from the agenda. We're also going to move item number 9 right after item number 4 as a courtesy to the many people in the audience on that particular agenda item. And next we have Mr. Doug Dunn has an announcement to make.
First of all, come visit the roses at the Dr. Roberts Rose Garden, I'm supposed to announce. I just came from a convocation in which the Arizona Community Foundation, Cochise County, announced their grant recipients. And as part of that convocation, they honored the Cochise County Volunteer of the Year. And of the 6 that were honored, 3 of them were from Bisbee, which really reinforces that we are a community that certainly depends heavily on volunteers, starting with the one we honored here tonight. The 3 individuals that were honored as, the official here, that's Carol Huddleston, Volunteer of the Year, and they were Dan Maldonado, Serena Sullivan, and my wife, Donna Gobb. Thank you.
Thank you. That concludes our announcements. We will now go to call to the public, and we'll see if we have any call to the public. Yes, we do. Allison Williams, we'll start with you.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, City Manager, City Attorney, City Clerk, and the public. My name is Allison Williams, Laundry Hill, Old Bisbee. The assistant program coordinator for the Copper Queen Library. And I just wanted to let you know lots of exciting things happening at the library with programming, with lectures, but specifically we've been really working on adult education classes, workshops, crafts, arts, and also youth projects. And we have added Qigong. We've added 2 levels of belly dance class, Middle Eastern belly dance class, level 1 and 2. And we're doing a series of crafts for the fall and holidays, leading up to the holidays. This month we started with paper mache. Next month we're going to do printmaking holiday cards, and the month after fabric arts to make your own gifts and whatnot. But I wanted to focus on the paper mache pumpkin workshop, which the second one is tomorrow, but we're having a contest. We're having a artist pumpkin contest to decorate the balcony of the library with creative pumpkins to represent our community and to lend to the holiday spirit. But no live pumpkins, no organic pumpkins. They melt, they rot, and they don't hold up well. But the Friends of the Copper Queen Library has offered $100 prize money, which is really fantastic. And the deadline to bring a pumpkin in of any material, paper mache, wood, metal, fabric, art of some sort, is October 17th. And the way we're going to do the voting is that the library patrons are going to vote. Every time you check out an item from the library, you get a voting slip. So you can vote every time you check out books or movies or what have you. And so it'll be community vote, and the Friends have put up the prize money. I know it's not a lot, but it's $100. But we'd really like for you to make a pumpkin and bring it. We have tea lights, and we'd really like the library to look beautiful this October. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Allison Williams. Next, we have Donna Pulling.
Thank you, Mayor. My name is Donna Pulling, and I live in Bisbee. And tonight, I would like to talk to you briefly about transparency. To illustrate this, I requested copies of Mr. Marsh's, our city manager's, daily calendar for the first 2 months that he's been in Bisbee. In August, he was in the office for 13 days. He was out of town for two conferences for a total of 6 days during that time. In those 13 days, he met 6 times with Scott Reese, a developer and partner in the Border City Land Corporation. He met with Mr. Reese more than any other person in the city. He only met with Mark Bernalette, the fire chief, 4 times in August to discuss the Memorandum of Understanding, which was the biggest item impacting city budget regarding the number of transports from Copper Queen Hospital. In September, he was in the office for 15 days. Out 7 days. In September, he met with Scott Reese twice, once with Chuck Alton to view a video, Getting to Great, that was paid for by Mr. Reese, interviewing merchants about economic development in the downtown area, and then alone after that with Mr. Reese for an hour. At the meet and greet with the merchants on 9/29, Mr. March talked about how he attended grad school at the University of Michigan, which was the alma mater of Mr. Reese, and perhaps maybe had been there during the same time. And that, coincidentally, he landed the job in Bisbee, and he was looking for work in Arizona because he wanted to be closer to his daughter. So we have an upcoming lawsuit with because of a lawsuit with Border City Land Corporation and their deadline for rezoning. Mr. Reese is deciding on how to maximize the value of the property of the parking lot in Bisbee. It has been heard before planning and zoning, and it will be heard again on October 28th, and there are a list of things that Mr. Reese will have to provide to the Planning and Zoning Commission. There will be a public hearing at that time for the approval of the rezoning. The items that are requested are a parking plan, including evaluation of on- and off-site parking, seeing a design that adheres to the Secretary of Interior's design standards that harmonize, thank you, with current development in the historic district, and a traffic circulation plan with at least minimum level detail. Thank you.
Thank you, Donna Pulling. I'm just going to do a real quick point of order without objection from the city attorney. Mr. Marsh meets with lots of people, and a lot of people from the public request those meetings to him. It's not like he's seeking them out. That's just my opinion. That's what I see. And so the assertions, kind of a loose assertion in my opinion, is incorrect. And I would think that those requests were made by a member of the public, and Mr. Marsh was very nice enough to give his time to lots of people, actually. And I think that's been ongoing, and it's a very good thing. And I think the council probably agrees with what I just said. Okay. Next, we will go to Andrew Laws.
Hello, Andrew Laws, Old Bisbee. I'm here tonight to support Maggie's efforts to stop putting fluoride in the water. And I was here last meeting, emailed you some information, article from the Lancet Journal stating how fluoride has been classified as a neurotoxicant and can pass the blood-brain barrier and affect children in the womb, and has been shown from 27 different studies, average of 7 points IQ decline in children. So I don't know what it costs to put fluoride in the water, but it's way too much. We need to stop. So it's also forced medication. What else is the government, you know, what other medication does the government actually force people to take without, you know, without their consent? So it's beyond time to get rid of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Andrew Laws. I believe that concludes the call to the public. We will now move on to item number one, accounts payable. Do we? It's. I think you're at Ms. Harris. I think you're at number nine.
Oh.
Yeah. Let's look. Let's just double check. Number nine, it says. Number nine. That's okay. Item number one, accounts payable. Do we have a motion?
I move that we approve accounts payable in amount of $293,082.79.
I second.
We have a motion and a second to approve accounts payable in amount of $293,082.79. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously. Item number two, approval of the consent agenda, items A through D, and I will read those. A, approval of the minutes of the regular session of Mayor and Council held on September the 20th, 2016 at 7 p.m. B, approval of the minutes of the work session of the Mayor and Council held on September the 13th, 2016 at 5:30 p.m. C, approval of the minutes of the special session of Mayor and Council held on September the 16th, 2016 at 5:30 p.m. D, approval of a special event liquor license application submitted by the Central School Project for an event to be held at 18 Brewery Avenue, Bisbee, Arizona, on Friday, November the 11th, 2016, and Saturday, November the 12th, 2016, from 12 p.m. till 9 p.m., and on Sunday, November the 13th, 2016, from 12 p.m. till 4 p.m., Lori McKenna, applicant. Do we have a motion?
I move that we approve the consent agenda items A through D.
Second. We have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda, items A through D. Ms. Coronado, would you take the roll, please?
Councilmember Connors?
Aye.
Councilmember Hanson?
Aye.
Councilmember Dowdy?
Aye.
Councilmember Dunn?
Aye.
Councilmember Sullivan?
Aye.
Mayor Irving?
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Item number three, discussion of possible approval to issue a letter of support to designate Arizona U.S. Route 80 as a historic route. And let me... We put this on the agenda. Mr. Marsh and I had a conversation with a lady by the name of J.J. Lamb in Vail, and if council has some questions, we can get her on the phone, and she's aware that we may call her if you have some suggestions. I'll just go over it just a little bit. Arizona U.S. Route 80 historic highway application was prepared by the Tucson Historic Preservation Foundation. The application was developed through numerous site and corridor surveys and with mapping support from Desert Archaeology Inc. The application utilized the superb work of Jeff Jensen's publication and detailed guide, Drive the Broadway of America, the US 80 and Bankhead Highway across the American Southwest, and Good Roads Everywhere, a history of road building in Arizona, prepared by ADOT, Environmental Planning Section by Melissa Keene and Simon Bruder. In addition to the available secondary sources, primary research was undertaken at the University of Arizona Special Collections, Arizona Historical Society, Research Library, and extensive field and research along the route. And the route somewhat goes, well, it does go like this. The highway traveled from Douglas to Bisbee, Tombstone, Benson Vale, into Tucson to Oracle Junction, through Florence, Apache Junction, Mesa, Tempe, Phoenix, Buckeye, Gila Bend, and down through Yuma. Any questions or comments from the council? Do we have a motion?
I move to approve the letter of support to designate Arizona U.S. Route 80 as a historic route.
I second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the letter of support to designate Arizona U.S. Route 80 as a historic route. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously. Item number four, discussion of possible direction to staff on a petition received from Susan Blackford regarding hiring a new auditor firm to go over all the city books for the last 5 years. And we have Ms. Blackford signed up. Ms. Susan Blackford, actually, you have two people signed up. We'll start with Ms. Susan Blackford.
I decided to start early walking up. First of all, we'd like to wish Serena many blessings in her upcoming marriage.
Thank you.
And on behalf of Mr. Marsh, there are a lot of us that appreciate all your hard work and your long hours, even at 8 or 9 p.m. here at night, and it's very refreshing how you've been caring for all of us in this community. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good evening. The concerned citizens and myself are asking for a new audit firm to be hired for next year. We are also asking that this firm or another certified firm do a forensic audit for a minimum of the last 3 years. I have contacted the State Audit Division, and per state law, they do not audit cities and towns. It would be great if they did, but they don't. It would also be a good thing for the taxpayers of this town if you would vote tonight to hire these new firms. The city manager and you and all can work out who to hire. Many of our taxpayers think that there are a lot of irregularities in the accounting books and do not have any confidence in the true nature of the city's fiscal health. We have a legal right as taxpayers to know the exact facts. I am also taking this time again to request that there be no charge for any taxpayer to get a copy of the current year's budget. Last year, you wanted to charge a committee head. Therefore, she did not get one. That's not good, you guys. We also feel in our request that it would also help these new companies, would help the new city manager and yourselves to do a better job for this community, as it will expose to representation, and that's what we're all looking for, just the facts. Remember all this. Remember, you have stated you have an open government policy, and by doing this, we feel it will create a trust again within this community. Please remember that you all represent the interest of all us taxpayers, and we're asking, why would you not do this? Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Susan Blackford. We also have Mr. Peter Van Gunlock signed up, former council member Peter Van Gunlock.
Peter Van Gunlock, 327 McLaren, and Warren, council and citizens. I have to agree with Susan Blackford that it really would behoove us, particularly at this time, with a possibility of a re-election or election of a mayor and a new city manager, that this would probably create a benchmark from which we can move ahead, and having a hiring a different auditing firm and having a forensic audit would be very helpful in reducing the amount of concern and by many citizens that feel that the finances leave something to be desired, or at least the way they're being tabulated. So I support Susan Blackford's request. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Blackford's petition of hiring a new auditing firm to go after all the city's books for the last 5 years at least. Currently, we are doing the audit. We're going on right now. However, in the future, a new mayor and council may want to look into this request or parts of it. Until then, without objection from the council, I would recommend this be filed for future reference. So be it. We're now going to, we've moved item number 5 up into behind item number 4, so we will go to item number 9 now. Discussion of possible approval of a notice of intent to adopt ordinance O-16-06, suspending Chapter 9, Section 9.5 of the Bisbee City Code entitled Fluoride in City Water System and Providing for Repeal and Severability. This was put on the agenda by Councilmember Sullivan and Councilmember Hansen, and at this point I will defer to either one of them. Or both.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, this item came up back in 2013 with the Sustainability Commission, and the commission had it on the agenda for several months, and it got talked about over and over, and eventually we decided to have a work session on it, and at that time, many people from the public came up and spoke against fluoridating the water. We had a couple of residents that spoke towards keeping it in, and we also had the American Dental Association came and spoke towards the health benefits of the fluoridation in the water. So after that, the commission did make a recommendation to council to go ahead and suspend that ordinance or at least look at it. That was our recommendation. At the time I was on the commission. That recommendation, as I understand, never made it to council because the current manager at the time said that council didn't have time to look at this at the time. So anyway, I'm bringing it up so that we can look at that recommendation. This year I did contact a couple of people to try and get a little bit more information about it. The president of Univar, who supplies the product that we use to fluoridate the water, I requested some information regarding toxicology reports for the product and ingredient lists for the product and a statement of its safety for being used in our public water. And that letter was sent certified, and it came with no response. So in my mind, if the company that's supplying a product, whatever the product is, whether it's food or anything, they can't stand behind that product and say, this is safe for your consumption of your people, then I think we need to take a look at it. I'm not saying fluoride is not helpful for dental health, because that's been shown to be beneficial in some studies, many studies, but I just don't think that it's appropriate at this time any longer, especially without evidence of its safety, to continue putting in our public water supply. So I did send two more letters to Univar requesting this information, and they have gone unanswered. Also, the Arizona Water Company, we asked them if they had any concerns about the safety or usage, and they have no stance for or against it. The only recommendation they have is that the city of Bisbee lower the amount that we're putting in to fit with the United States current guidelines. So currently we're doing 0.1%. They're recommending 0.7. So that's their only input. It does cost $7,200 per year to fluoridate, which that cost is paid back through the payers of the water bill. So the residents pay the water charge for the fluoridation. But basically that's where I'm at. I would have to agree with Andrew that I don't feel that fluoridating the water is the best way for people to receive their fluoride. At one time, maybe it was, but at this time, fluoride is in lots of toothpaste. It's in mouthwash. You can get fluoride if you need it, but not everybody needs it, not everybody wants it, and there are a lot of health concerns that are now coming out about it. 98% of Europe does not fluoridate. 5% of the world fluoridates. The rest of the world does not. And I just think that without the proof of its safety from the product supplier, I don't think we can say that we're doing our job in protecting our public health if we're allowing a product like this to be put in without any real proof from the supplier. Because that bag that's getting put in, it's not 100% fluoride. There's other contaminants in it. It's an industrial product. It's a byproduct. The company that we buy this from, well, that it's bought from, not us, City of Bisbee, but that it's supplied to Arizona Water Company, they supply chemicals of all kinds. It's a chemical manufacturing company. And we're taking those chemicals without knowing exactly what's in the bag, and we're dumping it in our water. And we're saying that it's good because it prevents cavities. Maybe it does. Fluoride has been proven to help with cavities. But has fluoride been proven, when ingested, not to be toxic in other ways? No. If it has, then let's get the letter from the company that's supplying it.
Councilmember Hansen.
I did a lot of research, and I went to the internet, and I really hate doing that, because for every study that says it's good, you get a study that says it's bad. You get one person that says, yes, it does prevent cavities. You get another study that says, no, it doesn't unless it's topical. So there's a lot of information out there, but there isn't anything that really is definitive. And one of the things that bothers me is, in the letter from the Arizona Water Company, they indicated that they did not use hydrofluorosilicic acid. It's got an IC and IC. I don't know how you pronounce two of those. But anyway, it doesn't. However, it has sodium fluorosilicate. And that is basically it's a form of fluorosilicate or silica, fluorosilicate that is diluted, which is just as bad as the hydro. What's it diluted with? How is it diluted? What does that mean? I mean, there isn't anything that really says, is this safe or not? And we don't have a material or manufacturer's safety data sheet that indicates what all of the concerns are or all of the risk. Thank you. Even such a simple word of having something like this in the water. And not knowing that concerns me. And I think we need to get some more information on this. And I don't want to make a decision, you know, to eliminate it, but I think that the idea of waiting, suspending it until we can get more definitive data as to whether or not this is something that is a good thing and is not imposing a risk to our community.
Thank you. Any other comments from the council? I just have a few. 6 months ago, I didn't really know a whole lot about fluoride, and Ms. Kohanic was in my office, and we talked about it. And one thing that I insisted upon, this is a seriously important issue for the community, and one thing I essentially insisted upon that this should go to a vote of the people. So I was a little disturbed that this was placed on the agenda Thursday afternoon for a Tuesday night council session, and the public, it appears to me, to a large degree, was simply left out. Because in many cases, people are busy with their jobs and their lives, and they're not reading upcoming council agendas. I happen to believe fluoride in the water system is absolutely essential. So does the Center for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. So does the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. The American Dental Association and I have a list of many, many groups, probably 100 in my packet, of agencies and organizations that support fluoride in the water. And according to all the surgeon generals of the last 50 or 60 years of the United States, the public health surgeon generals of the United States support fluoride in our water system, and they say that there's been a dramatic decrease in cavities and tooth decay. So I will have a lot more to say, and I will read some articles from the current Surgeon General, Mr. Vivek Murthy, and a former Surgeon General, Mr. Richard Carmona, from 2004. So I will do that later, but we need to get to all the people that have signed up. And so I really appreciate everyone coming out for this issue, and as I said a few moments ago, or maybe I didn't, but during this term of my office, this is the most important issue that has come up because it deals with the health, in particularly children's health, because fluoride will coat that teeth and it will last into their older years. So it's absolutely essential, in my opinion, not to take the fluoride out of our water system. Now, Ms. Sullivan mentioned the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services made a suggestion, not necessarily a recommendation, but a suggestion that can go down to 0.7 parts per million instead of 1.0 parts per million. And one other thing that some cities don't fluoridate because they don't have to. And three cities in America, three big cities, there's actually lots of them, because the natural fluoridation in the water is at a level that is substantially enough to create that fluoridated level, including Jacksonville, Florida, El Paso, Texas, Colorado Springs, Colorado. So what we're going to do now is we're going to go to the various people signed up on this agenda item, and I very much appreciate all of you that have come out tonight. We'll start. Yes, ma'am. Ms. Councilmember Hansen.
You're right. The CDC doesn't say that there's anything bad in the fluoride. However, it does say that it will cause fluorosis, especially in children who are younger than the age of 8. Doesn't that bother anybody?
Yes.
Well, can I comment on that? Fluorosis is, and we have some professionals in the audience tonight that would know a lot more about it than I do, but what I've read about fluorosis, and that is one of the reasons why the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services is suggesting maybe take it down to 0.7, but fluorosis, according to them, is barely visible, and it's a white spot. But I would think that is far better than having a major cavity and losing a tooth.
But, Mayor, there are other ways of getting fluoride. It doesn't have to be in the water system. We have fluoride toothpaste, and I've read a couple of articles that said that it needs to be topical. And I read one article that says that it has absolutely no benefit unless you actually have the teeth, before the eruption of the teeth. And we're talking about children here. So why are we fluoridating the water when it's most people are getting it in other ways?
Later, after the public has spoken, I will read a statement from Surgeon General Richard Carmona from 2004. Without any comments or questions from the council, let's go to the public. We'll start with Jeff Harris.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. My name is Jeff Harris. I live here in Warren. I have brought with me tonight a petition. It has roughly 400 signatures. I believe the exact number is 396 signatures. And what these people are signing is a petition, not one that addresses whether or not there are benefits to fluoridating the water. There very well may be benefits. These people, according to the wording of the petition, are concerned with choice. They want to be given an opportunity to opt out if, in their own opinion, not the opinion of the council, not the opinion of anyone else, but in their own opinion, they decide that the risks are not worth the possible rewards. I will read the first part of the petition so we know what it is people signed. Alone among the cities in Cochise County, the City of Bisbee has mandated through Article 9.5 of its city code that fluoride be introduced into all tap water, I added tap, distributed in Bisbee to a concentration of one part per million. No provision has been made for opting out by those who object to the adulteration of their sole source of tap water with a substance that carries with it known risks in addition to any possibility of benefit. It was curious that Univar would not share with you, did not respond. I have an excerpt from the hazardous material data safety data sheet published by Univar. On page 2 of this data sheet, under potential health effects, are the following entries. Chronic exposure may cause mottling of teeth and bone damage, osteosclerosis, and fluorosis. Symptoms of fluorosis include brittle bones, weight loss, anemia, calcified ligaments, general ill health, and joint stiffness. Also in that same page, too, is aggravation of pre-existing conditions. Populations that appear to be at increased risk from the effects of fluoride are individuals that suffer from diabetes insipidus or some forms of renal failure. I can understand why they may not want to have sent you this. There are indeed risks. And as Andrew pointed out earlier, this is mass medication. No medication in America should be forced on people. There is such a thing as a patient's autonomy or the autonomy of the individual to decide what sort of health care is appropriate for him and his circumstances. That is not the case here. Everybody, whether they like it or not, is getting medicated through their tap water. This is un-American. And as was pointed out by Councilman Hansen, there is a segment of the population that receives no benefit. Children before they infants before they have teeth aren't going to benefit from it, yet they must run these risks. The elderly who no longer have any teeth aren't getting any benefit at all. I don't care how wonderful it is for people with teeth. If you have no teeth, you're not getting any benefit, and they still have to run these risks. Until the city finds a means of allowing people to opt out, it has no business whatsoever in an Orwellian fashion mandating that everyone must accept this through their tap water. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff Harris. Let's go to Linda Barnett.
Hello, I'm Linda Barnett. I live in Bisbee. I'm not a scientist. I can tell you from my own experience what has happened to me with fluoridation. I am 64 years old, and about 15 years ago, I had experience in West Virginia where my teeth were scratched because the dentist lost control of his drill and went across my front teeth. So over the years, I was getting fluoridation treatments, but maybe once or twice in a period of 3 to 4 years. And as I got older, I learned I had osteoporosis. So I was told I should increase this because it would also help my bones in some indirect way. Well, I had this done, and what happened was my front teeth became infected or affected with fluorosis. I could see it across my front teeth. And granted, my bones were thinning and my enamel was softening, but I'm still part of the population, and I could see this so-called minor cosmetic effect happening. Well, anyone who knows me knows I'm vain. I'm all accused, why are you so dressed up? Where are you going? You know, life is short. Come on. And I like to show up, and I like to look good. And I had to have my front teeth filled. And when I confronted my dentist about whether this was the fact, he was reticent about it. He wasn't exactly willing to step on the toes of the medical Dental Association, but he was saying there are reports, there are studies. I just can't go there. And I believe, as you do, that this is what has caused this. And I am, again, perhaps a minority of the country or the baby boomers in this country, no. But I live here now, and I don't like the fact that I can't opt out of this. I don't know what other health problems might be causing me. I saw visual effects that I had to pay to have fixed. And I don't like the idea that any population is being medicated against their will. I think it's unfair, and I think it takes a second look at. And if you want to read something, look on the back of your any fluoridated toothpaste, and it will give you a warning label. And if a child ingests this, look at how many emergency cases are run through in the country. Never mind in a small population like this. It has to do with children being affected by an overdose of fluoride. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Linda Barnett. Just for the public consumption, I don't have any particular order. I'm not arranging the order. I'm just going straight down through the list. I think that's the fairest way to do this. So the next speaker will be Evelyn Whitmer.
Good evening. Can you guys hear me? My name is Evelyn Whitmer, and I work for the University of Arizona Cooperative Extension. And we have several programs that we have in the community. And I wanted to kind of share a little bit about those programs that we have. They're dealing with oral health with the youth. And we've noticed that a lot of the kids aren't brushing their teeth. We see that as we're doing our oral health education. And I wanted to give you, I don't want to give you opinion. I want to give you some of the research that I found, so I'm going to be giving you some of that. And this is all from the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention. And according to the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, many research studies have proven the safety and benefit of fluoride. For 70 years, people in the United States have benefited from drinking water with fluoride, leading to better health, better dental health. Public water fluoridation was first practiced in 1945. In the U.S., as of 2012, 25 countries have artificial fluoridation to varying degrees. 11 of them have more than 50% of their population drinking fluoridated water. Others may have private wells, no funding for fluoridation, etc. A further 28 countries have water that is naturally fluoridated. As of 2012, about 435 million people worldwide receive water fluoridated at the recommended levels. Nearly half of them living in the United States. I have searched for peer-reviewed, credible research-based information, and that's what we do at the university. We give that information out. It has to be research-based, and that's the information we give out. I couldn't find any in contrast to fluoridated water. Drinking fluoridated water keeps teeth strong. And this is regardless of your economic status, and it's a socially equitable practice. Drinking fluoridated water keeps teeth strong and reduces cavities by about 25% in children and adults. By preventing cavities, community water fluoridation has shown to save money for families and for the U.S. health system. Right now, in the county, we have 46% of our children have dental caries or cavities. And this equates to, I believe, about 7 cents per month for the citizens in this area who have the water fluoridation. Oral health in the United States is much better today than it was many years ago. But cavities are still one of the most common chronic diseases of childhood. Community water fluoridation is the most cost-effective way to deliver fluoride to people of all ages, education levels, and income levels who live in this community. And by the way, I do live on the edge of Bisbee, and I grew up here, so Most water has some naturally occurring fluoride, but usually not enough to prevent cavities. Community water systems can add the right amount of fluoride to the local drinking water to prevent cavities. The U.S. Public Health Service, and that was in 2015, now recommends an optimal fluoride concentration of 0.07 milligrams per liter. Community water fluoridation is recommended by nearly all public health, medical, and dental organizations. It is recommended by the American Dental Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, U.S. Public Health Service, and World Service Organizations. Because of its contributions to the large decline in cavities in the United States since the 1960s, CDC named community water fluoridation one of the great public health achievements of the 20th century. Thank you.
Thank you, Evelyn Whitmer.
Can I comment?
Certainly. Councilmember Sullivan has a comment.
I just want to comment about the decline in caries and cavities. They have, in fact, gone down significantly from the 60s, actually even the 50s, I think, throughout the United States, where we did put in a lot of fluoridation in every state almost. They've also gone down at the exact same rate throughout non-fluoridated countries. It's not just the fluoride that's making the cavities go away. It's better hygiene. And if you want to look that up, the World Health Organization has a lot of research and charts that you can look at that show those numbers, and it's very clear.
Okay, thank you. We'll next go to the next person, and that will be Barbara Raby.
Good evening. My name is Barbara Raby. I'm a dental hygienist here in Bisbee, and I work for Dr. Long as a full-time hygienist. I was born and raised in Bisbee, and I strongly support the fluoride in the water in the community of Bisbee. When I first started practicing dental hygiene here with Dr. Simpson and Dr. Toole was the dentist that I started with, and he was very proud that he implemented that program to put the fluoride in the water because he saw a decrease in the decay. When he started working with his dad, he said, why is there so much decay? He had just got out of dental school, and he couldn't figure out what it was until he implemented that program, and it caused a big decrease in the children's decay here in Bisbee. Mr. Kevin Earle, he's the executive director for the Arizona Dental Association. He wasn't able to be here tonight, but he went ahead and sent us fluoride facts that I put on everybody's desk. So you guys could, you know, look over the facts before we make a decision on this. And for this to be, you know, if it's going to come to be a vote from the community, if that's what it's going to take, if the people really want it out, it's our community, and that should be the choice. But I really strongly support fluoride for the water in Bisbee. And we have other dentists here that I've worked for and I highly respect, and they are here to support the water for the fluoride in our water. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara Raby. I actually talked to Mr. Kevin Earle on Friday in Phoenix, and he also mentioned to me that the number one reason for absences in schools is toothaches. So we're going to move to the next speaker. That will be Samantha Sanzone.
Good evening. I'm sure. Good evening. My name is Samantha Sanzone. I am 18 years of age. I was born in Tucson, but I've been raised both here and in Tucson. I just recently moved here last year with my family. What I've noticed with fluoridation is I come from the south side. So most people in that part of Tucson do not brush their teeth. They don't have insurance or anything. And fluoridation really helped because we would have teachers give us little cups of fluoride to do in elementary school because nobody was brushing their teeth. And we had dentists have to come to the school and do free exams because it got to the point where most of us were absent because of cavities. Mostly. Since they did implement that, and what I have noticed is my initial amount of cavities have gone down. I haven't had any health adversities or anything to it.
And it seems overall to be like something that the community should want, but you know, people don't. So everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but in the end, it's more over what's are the rewards rather than the risk, because statistics can be falsified, even on the most credible websites.
Thank you, Samantha Sanzone. Next, we will go to Maggie Kohanic.
Thank you for your time and putting this on the agenda. I think it's really, really important to discuss these issues. And some of you know that I'm very passionate about health in general. And because I'm passionate about health, I research and I look at information. And is that high enough? Maybe up on top, Alondra, on the very top, if that's okay. She's putting up some information that I'm going to talk about. So we're trying to get something to be able to see here besides just talk about it. But I brought some props. I brought some information. But we've heard over and over again that no one has been able to look at what's on the bag of the fluoride that we're putting in our water. And when I spoke here last meeting, I actually gave it to the city clerk to pass out to all the council people to show the actual information that you can download. It's called an MSDS, and it's what is explaining what's in all the chemicals that they sell. It's like if you look at any kind of label, you have liability as a company to put the truth on your bag, or you're going to be in big trouble. So they did that. And I think it's really telling, and that's what this agenda item is about, is what is in that bag of fluoride that we are dumping into our water. So I brought some props. Let's pretend that this is fluoride. Ooh, fluoride. It's really just ashes from a wood stove, but it kind of looks like fluoride to me. It's just kind of a granular thing, right? Don't worry, it's safe. But we're going to pretend it's not safe, because I would think, and we have someone here from Arizona Water, I think that when they put this in our drinking water, they have to wear this. Is that true, Joe?
Yes. Oh. Safety.
Exactly. So I can't talk with this on, but this is part of our crop. This. I can't breathe this. In fact, none of you can breathe that. Or you would have some of these problems. If inhaled, this product that we put in our water, this compound can cause fluoride poisoning. Early symptoms include nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, weakness. Later effects include central nervous system effects, not fun, cardiovascular effects, and death. Well, yeah, you're not going to pour this down your throat, but they have to wear masks. As employees, they have to put this in the water directly every month. I don't know what that looks like, but I'm imagining it has a lot to do with safety precautions. That's just what they have on the bag under warning, and they also have under inhalation, causes severe irritation to the respiratory tract. Symptoms may include coughing, sore throat, labored breathing, may be absorbed through inhalation of the dust. Symptoms may parallel those from ingestion exposure, that's just getting it through the skin, and irritation effects may not appear immediately. Now, if you were to eat this directly, toxic may cause salivation, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, and abdominal pain. Symptoms of weakness, tremors, shallow respiration, cardiopedal spasm, convulsions, coma may follow, may cause brain and kidney damage, affects heart and circulatory system, death may occur from respiratory paralysis. Doesn't sound good. Okay, so that's just if there was a spill or continued exposure. So what I thought we'd do is demonstrate what we're doing every month is taking this caustic toxic material and we're putting it in water. I want you guys to get it. This is a toxic material. Of course, it's not that thick, but it's still in there. You get it? It's chemical. You can't see it, but this is fluoridated water. You can't see it. But we are adding this toxic material to water, and we're asking everybody to drink it. Drink. The dentists who like it think it's good for teeth. There's actually studies that show if you're an infant, you're not supposed to be getting any of this. Do we have any kind of warning label on our tap water system? We've heard from people who believe that it's causing a better mouth for them, they have better oral health. Well, we just heard that in countries that have no fluoridated water, their oral health is getting better also. Do you get it? We're trying to tell you that in this bag of fluoride, it's toxic. Ladies and gentlemen, it is toxic. Now, I do have a quote here, and I'd ask everyone to at least watch a video. You can go home and watch it. It's on YouTube, and it's called Our Daily Dose. And they have many, many doctors and many scientists who are going to talk to you about fluoride in the water and how it's not good for you. This one doctor, Angela Hind, she's a doctor, she said, we used to think about poisons in terms of dose, but now we need to look at the timing of the exposure. So even a little dose of poison at a critical time in a child's development can have lifelong negative impacts. So fluoride can help your teeth, possibly. And if you want to do that, put it on your teeth. Take that $7,000 that we put in, put it in the water, duh, and put it on your teeth. And let it work and let people get it if they want it, not because you have to get it. It's not right. We have public that is at risk. And what it says on this, on the bag that we get, that we pour in, it says chronic exposure may cause mottling of teeth. Do you, everybody knows what that is? We talked about it tonight, the browning spots on your teeth. I happen to know someone who got it from living in Bisbee. They don't like it. They've had to spend thousands of dollars to make their teeth whiter. And bone damage. So if it's mottling your teeth, do you think it might be mottling the inside bones that are inside your body? Yes. Because on the bag, it shows that chronic exposure may cause, chronic exposure. And I just read that quote. It depends on when it's being delivered to your body. It may cause mottling of teeth and bone damage, which is the osteoporosis stuff. That's right here, brittle bones. Okay, so if you're 17 years old now and your mouth is doing better, what happens when you're 60 years old and your joints are starting to get stiff? Is it worth it? Well, it could be if we put it directly on the teeth and not in the water. That's all we're saying. Also, if you are an at-risk population, do not take it if you have diabetes or any renal impairment. That's the kidney problems, right? Joint stiffness, general ill health. How many people do you know that is getting older and they're getting stiffer, they're getting hips replaced, they've got bone problems? All right, so they have done studies. You can look at this, and it's on the bag that we're putting in the water that they're saying it causes these things. They're not saying maybe. They're working on their liability. The company. Whoops, that's my props. They're saying that, watch out, folks, because if you take this in your water, these things may happen. That is what they put on their bag, and that's what we're trying to address on this agenda item. It's not whether it really works on the teeth or not, so much as what's in that bag. So, you know, I had this. I'm sorry. This is what I think of fluoride. I really do believe it's a stupid thing to do. I've also read a study that a city figured out how much fluoride is going into a person's body. 4% of this fluoride is actually going internally into the body. It's still causing all that problem, but it's only 4% of this. So where does the rest of the fluoride go that we're dumping every single month into our water? It's going into our land, into our gardens. It's going into our showers. And there are at-risk people right now that are being injured because they can't take showers unless they get in their own tap water from Bisbee. So I think it's this, but that's my own opinion. But I think if somebody is going to put that in the water and it has all those warnings on it, the risk warnings, we need to stop it, look at what we're doing, and come up with a different proof, a proof that there is no harm done. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Maggie Kohenig.
Mayor, could I ask a question?
Certainly. Councilmember Hansen.
Maggie, does it say what the chronic dose is or the chronic exposure is?
Well, to answer that, what I would do is read again the quote from the doctor. The doctor said, we used to think about poisons in terms of dose, but now we need to take a look at the timing of exposure. So even a little dose of poison at a critical time in a child's development can have a lifelong negative impact.
Yeah, I understand that, but you were talking about the MSDS. Did it say on that when you...
No, it does not say what the dose is. I know that, you know, that we talked about one part per million versus seven, but I think that if it's a supplement for my body, I choose to not take it in my body if I don't know what's in it. Okay? Thank you.
Maggie Kohenig, thank you.
Mayor?
We're waiting for the prof to disappear. Councilmember Connors.
Thank you, Mayor. Do we have a copy of the MSDS up here? Is there one floating around that could float down to the end of the dais up here?
I have the MSDS.
Thank you. I mean, he's got the Univar handout, or may I have that, please?
Mine is just excerpts.
Yeah, I'd rather have it not taken out of text and just. May I take a look at that?
I can make copies and drop it out at your office. It's from Univar.
Okay. Okay. We'll go with the next speaker right now. Councilmember Connors has another comment. We'll go to Alondra. Normally, we kind of like last names, but you don't have to give it if you don't want to.
The only thing that I want to say is a study has been done and proven that fluoride calcifies the pineal gland.
Okay, next we'll go to... Next, we will go to Jim Garrow. Garrow?
My name is Jim Garnell, and I also am concerned about anything that harms the body, whether it's a minimal amount or more, and finding out that it does calcify the pineal gland, which is hindering a very important part of our body, of which maybe we don't use much of today. But I feel, and the information I've been getting is we're going to be using it a lot in the coming months and years. So I'm concerned about any toxicity in our water. I personally have taken the steps to neutralized through scientific evidence the water on my own property in Saginaw, and friends and neighbors also consume the water that I have. But I'm concerned also about the community. So I have to issue my disappointment and continue to drinking this water with a low dose of toxicity in the water. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jim Garnell. Next, we will go to Sharon Rock.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Thank you for addressing this issue. My name is Sharon Rock. I live on Quality Hill in Bisbee. I have an educational background in integrative health and nutrition. In the 16 years I've lived in Bisbee, I've either bought filtered water or filtered the municipal water I drink. Removal of fluoride requires very specialized fluoride filter, a reverse osmosis filter, or a distillation system. So people who have water filters and think that they're filtering out the fluoride most likely are not, unless they have one of those systems that I just mentioned. Fluoride is a toxin to the human body. I don't think that's a real question. It's like mercury or aluminum or lead. Unfortunately, fluoride has been considered safe in small amounts. But over time, science and increasingly the dental profession have become aware of fluoride's ill effects on health. The amount that used to be considered safe in parts per million is no longer recognized as safe. And this makes sense because fluoride accumulates in the body, and initially there was not evidence of its ill effects. But as it accumulates, it causes increasing harm. It's true that topical fluoride on teeth can help prevent dental decay. I don't think that's a big question. That's been proven. It does strengthen the exterior of the teeth. But even topical treatments have negative effects. Certainly, when you're brushing with fluoridated toothpaste or using fluoridated mouthwash, you swallow some of it. You know, you don't get it all out of your mouth. And even if you could get it all, if you didn't swallow any of it, your mouth is one of the places that absorbs things very readily. So you're getting more fluoride in your body than you think. One of the places that it does accumulate, and Maggie pointed this out, is in the bones. And it's proven, without a question of a doubt, that it does cause bones to become brittle. And there's many other things, and I'm not an expert on this, but this is one thing that I do know about. Today I called my dental office, Medicine Wheel Dental, Dr. Stephen Swidler, the dentist who is Dr. Andrew Wiles' dentist in Tucson. And their position is what I just got done telling you. It can be used topically, and it can help strengthen teeth, and it can help prevent dental caries, but it is a toxin. Ingesting fluoride via drinking water makes no rational sense at all. Why would anyone willingly ingest a small but continuous amount of a known poison like mercury, lead, or arsenic? It just doesn't make good sense. The cost, it's kind of like there used to be an antibacterial ointment, like I think in my mother's youth, and the active ingredient of it was mercury. It worked very, very well. It was a perfect antibiotic, except that the mercury itself was extremely toxic. So no amount of antibacterial effect was worth putting this mercury on your skin. And this is the same kind of thing. It's also like, this is a little bit different, but it's not a perfect analogy like that one, but that is pretty much a perfect analogy. Also, when my mother was a child, when she used to go into the shoe store, she used to play with a little machine on the floor where she could put her foot and see an x-ray of her foot, and it was measuring, you know, what size shoe she would wear. And there wasn't any understanding at that time that the x-rays were causing, they could cause ill effects. X-rays, you know, just willy-nilly like that. There's a place and time for them, but to just play with it like that is not right. And this is another one of those things where science has now, we can understand now that fluoride is a toxin, a known toxin. So if we If we wish to protect our teeth from dental caries and we wish to do it using fluoride, it's the topical way is the way of doing it. So for the long-term health of the citizens of Bisbee, I ask you to stop adding fluoride to our drinking water. Give us the option of how we want to use fluoride. You know, if people still want to have it in their drinking water, you can buy little tablets and put it in your own drinking water. But let people have the choice. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon Rock. Next, we are going to go to Donald C. Simpson from the Arizona Dental Association.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and council members. My name is Donald Simpson. I'm a dentist practicing in Sierra Vista, been there for over 40 years. And I'm a past president of the Southern Arizona Dental Society and a past president of the Arizona Dental Association, which serves all the dentists in the state. And, of course, we are a component of the American Dental Association. As the mayor has already pointed out, more than 100 health organizations support water fluoridation, and it has been recognized as one of the top 10 public health measures of the 20th century. A lot's been said here that's based on conjecture, on single studies, on internet articles. I always look at internet articles with a lot of skepticism. I try to go to the best respected sources like the American Dental Association, the American Medical Association, Mayo, WebMD. Those are good safe sources. Some of these studies cited, I just quickly looked here and found out how bogus some of them were. The one study about the pineal gland is based on one Jennifer Luke study with cadavers, and then she did studies on gerbils, and they had so much fluoride in there that it would kill you to drink that much water with fluoride at the optimum amount. So it's a bogus study. One study doesn't prove anything anyway. You should have to have it duplicated. I understand the skepticism, and I applaud you're wanting to do due diligence and get the safety data information from your company. I looked that up, and I can give you where you can get it, sds.univar.com. They'll send it to you. It's not hard to find. I don't know why they didn't respond to your letter. I would certainly get to the bottom of that and try to make sure that you are getting a good quality product. But as far as fluoridation goes, first of all, fluoride, the element fluorine, is the 13th most common element in the Earth's crust. It's all around us. It's in rocks. In every drop of groundwater, there is fluoride. So those people that are so worried about the fluoride causing bones, brittleness, and pineal gland calcification, you better get a reverse osmosis system in your house, because if you don't put one gram of fluoride in the whole water system, there is already fluoride in Bisbee's water naturally. It occurs through the rocks, and it's leached out, and it varies. That's how they discovered that it was successful in stopping tooth decay. A dentist in Colorado Springs in the early 1900s moved there and noticed everybody's teeth had fluorosis. He also noticed they didn't have tooth decay. Myself, I had the same skepticism. I was in high school in the 60s, and I was a John Bircher, and I thought, oh man, that fluoride's bad stuff. It's the commies doing it. Well, then I went and joined the service. I was basically a hygienist for the Air Force, and I was cleaning people's teeth, and I saw my first really severe case of fluorosis. Not one cavity, though. Then I saw another one, same thing. So that's two. That doesn't make a study. But you can almost virtually wipe out tooth decay if you give a high level of fluoride. But you do have the consequences of having fluorosis. And that is a cosmetic problem. And I want to show you some models. Now, it can be very severe. The severe cases I've seen were from people from Douglas. They're all in their 80s or older now because they stopped using those wells that had the high fluoride. Studies were done in St. David in the 30s. Their wells varied up to 7.15 parts per million. That's 10 times what the recommendation is. And they didn't die from the fluoride. The gentleman I know in Douglas right now, he's doing well. He's in his 80s. He's got fluorosis. And fluorosis can be ugly. I'll show you the worst case scenario here. And the brownness comes from food stains. So yes, that's ugly. and that's recession there, and that person's probably in their 70s or 80s when that picture was taken. The more normal case is this, a little white spots. And with the fluoride levels that would be in Bisbee, you'd have to drink a lot of water and maybe eat your toothpaste, and that's why the warnings are on there. As I understand it, the amount of fluoride that's in a tube of toothpaste would not be fatal to a child if they ate the whole thing. That's why they keep it at that level. It'd make you sick, you'd probably throw up. Now, this is another moderate case. Now, those are not pretty, and you shouldn't overdo it. But if you had a choice between having your child look like that or having them look like this, which would you take? And fluoride in the proper level at 0.7 parts per million, it's probably going to even give you this, but it will reduce half of this. So it's certainly a public health benefit. And there's some information that was given to you from the ADA, and I encourage you to find out more about Univar. In cities where they have discontinued fluoridation, let me read you just one example. And I think it's in your list there, but maybe not. In Antigo, Wisconsin, they began water fluoridation in June 1949, and they ceased adding fluoride to its water in November 1960. After 5.5 years without optimal levels of fluoride, second grade children had over 200% more decay. Those are the ones that would have had no benefit because they took it out. The fourth graders, who would have had a little benefit before they stopped it, they had 70% more. The sixth graders, 91% more than those in the same age groups in 1960. The residents of Antigo reinstituted water fluoridation in October 1965 on the basis of the severe deterioration of their children's oral health. As I said, it's a naturally occurring element. It's in all groundwater. It's in Bisbee's water. So if you're really worried about your bag of ashes, you better get reverse osmosis. The other thing is that bag of ashes is going to go in a million-gallon water tank, and concentration does make a difference. You can use chlorine to disinfect water. It will have warnings on it. Don't inhale the fumes also. In fact, you can die from the chlorine. So concentration means everything. And I'm just here to tell you that water fluoridation has been looked at by all these groups. They continue to look at it. That's why the optimum level has been reduced. They say, well, we can get it down. Now, I was just talking with a hygienist in Pinal County. And she's been up there. She noticed that they had a lot less decay than they did down here in Cochise County. She also noticed that the wells there are generally at 1.7 parts per million, so more than twice of what the recommendation is. So they may get a little more fluorosis. And she was wondering why they didn't make them reduce that. Well, the maximum that the EPA recommends allowing is 4 parts per million. So that's about 6 times as much as what is recommended here. So again, I recommend your due diligence looking into your Univar thing. This should be available. Don't take the water don't take the fluoride out of the water, because you're not getting it all out. And it's a good public health measure. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Dr. Donald Simpson.
We do have a gentleman here from, who worked as a scientist with the ADA. And if you've got questions, he probably knows.
Okay. Would you want to come up? Well, we better wait. I better just go down through the list first. Next will be Carolyn Harris.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. I'm here to speak tonight about new business item 9. My name is Carolyn Harris. I have been voting in Old Bisbee since 1997. Please do not suspend Chapter 9, Section 9.5 of the Bisbee City Code, entitled Fluoride in City Water Systems. I have a Master's of Arts in Teaching Science from the School of Forestry, Engineering, and Natural Resources at Northern Arizona University. I've been teaching science in Cochise County Public Schools for almost 20 years. I think there's a lot of people who are already addressing the science. I want to just add, kids don't vote. They can't vote. They're not 18 yet, but around here, a lot of them suck on lemons and ingest way too much sugar. Many of these same children do not have dental insurance and do not get the care they need. So it's your job as our leaders in the city to think about these children and the future of their health.
please believe in and utilize evidence-based, peer-reviewed science. Science-based public health has changed the world. Please go forward, not backwards. Leave the fluoride in the water. It works. Thank you.
Thank you, Carolyn Harris. Next, we are going to go to Jared Long. I believe Dr. Jared Long.
Thank you. Thank you, council members. I appreciate it. Give me an opportunity to speak here. And I'll be very brief. Fluoride's not really a drug, it's a mineral. And it, like Dr. Simpson says, it's naturally occurring in the environment. And it was exactly how he said it. A dentist in Colorado discovered it anecdotally, and then they did studies on it, scientific peer-reviewed studies that showed that the decay was reduced when there was an increased amount of fluoride available to, and I'll be very specific here, to the ameloblasts, which are the cells that create enamel during the developmental process. If the fluoride is available in serum in the body, in vitro, it is available to be used while that enamel is being formed. Once the ameloblasts are done, 6-7 years old, something like that, 10? Anyway, I can't remember the exact number. I'm not the research scientist. once those cells are dormant or done, they're no longer making enamel. You make enamel once in your life, pretty much for a small period from the time you're in your mother's womb until you're, I guess that's probably about 8 years old. And that's when it's the most beneficial. After that, yes, okay, so fluoride topical is probably more effective at that point, but it's the children who are the most susceptible to the lack of fluoride or the presence of fluoride in the water. It does have some benefits for adults as well. And those are all being said. And all that information's there. You can go check it out. You can look at it. I highly recommend that we keep it there. If there's any toxic substances or extra chemicals in that MSDS data sheet, I mean, by all means, you know, get another company. Whatever you guys have, you know, whatever due diligence you have to make. I don't want to see anybody, you know, inadvertently given some toxic chemicals. Fluoride is not one of them if it's in the right concentration. 0.7 is very low. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Jared Long. Next we'll go to, I believe Ms. Rocky was signed up twice, so we'll go now to John Kuhn. I'm not saying it right, probably. Okay. You can mention your name again so the clerks have it on tape.
John Keeney.
Thanks.
And just in terms of full disclosure, I live now, I retired here in Bisbee. I live right on the outskirts of the city limit on the other side of the tunnel. And I'm on a well, and my well water has fluoride in it, but not up to the recommended amount. So mostly, and I do understand people's fears and concerns with health these days. I eat organic fruits and vegetables as much as possible. So, and I understand people's fears and even skepticism about science in general and things like that. But so basically I just want to answer some of the scientific questions that have been raised. First of all, it's salicylic acid.
Thank you.
So the first C is kind of soft and the last C is. So first of all, toxicity is related to dosage. And the safety precautions that somebody's going to deal with when they're administering a bag full of this stuff into the water supply, they do have to take safety precautions because of the dosage they're dealing with. And just to, for comparison purposes, fluorine, chlorine, iodine, bromine, are all in the same chemical element table. It's the same family of chemical elements. So those are all related in terms of their properties, toxicity, and whatnot. And to compare it to chlorine, for instance, what a lot of the misinformation comes about because people compare apples to oranges and talk about fluoride in toxic doses. Well, chlorine gas is poisonous. It depends on the what is toxic and what is not. Not only depends upon toxicity, but it's the chemical form in which it's administered. And it's the way the body absorbs it. So if you breathe chlorine gas, it's poisonous. It'll kill you. In fact, it's been used in nerve gases and things like that. But we add it to the water supply. So fluoride is not the only quote-unquote forced medication. We put chlorine in the water supply precisely because at the concentration that's added, its adverse effects are minimal, and what it's preventing is far worse. It's preventing all kind of nasty organisms from thriving in your water. And without chlorine added, if you take that same chlorine added to hydrogen, well, it's hydrochloric acid. Hydrochloric acid will burn your skin, but we have hydrochloric acid in our stomach to help dissolve the food that we eat. So all of these things, you can't just talk about fluoride as poison. It depends on what form it's in, how it's administered, the dosage. Iodine is added to salt precisely because the deficiency of iodine was a serious health problem for people that lived in the interior. You get it from seafood and things like that, water, seawater, but in the interior. So for decades, iodine has been added to salt. Chlorine has been added to water. We use bromine as a substitute for chlorine in a lot of water spas and things like that, bromide salts. So basically the way research is done, anybody can do a study, and anybody can put anything on the internet. But when we use the term peer-reviewed, there are journals that have panels of scientists that will evaluate the legitimacy of any publication that's submitted for publication in that journal. That's peer review. And most of the studies that are done in America don't pass the peer review muster. They're sent back to the author and say, these are the problems with the studies, and we're not going to publish it unless you do such and such. Then one study, as Dr. Simpson pointed out, one study doesn't prove anything by itself. It's the built-up consensus of scientific opinion over a period of time evaluating many, many studies. And that's what all numerous panels, the American Academy of Pediatricians, the American Medical Association, in addition to the CDC and Public Health Service and the American Dental Association, they periodically bring scientists together, doctors, physicians, epidemiologists, and scientists, and I've been on some of those, and they review all of the information available. And those are a lot of times open to the public so that the public can bring up concerns, fears, and individual studies. And they review all of that information. And basically, because of the decrease in cavities over time, and because of the increase in availability of fluoride in many forms, the CDC has reduced their recommendation. And I have a copy of their most recent recommendation published in the fall of 2015, which does recommend that it be reduced from 1 point per million to 0.7 parts per million. And let me give you kind of a comparison of what that is. 0.7 parts per million is the same ratio as 1 inch in 23 miles, or the same ratio as 1 minute in 1,000 days. So we're talking about very small concentrations. And as Dr. Long and Dr. Simpson pointed out also, it's everywhere. It's in my well water. It's in your water. You can use reverse osmosis and special filters to remove it if you're concerned about it. But from a personal point of view, I've worked in public health, and I retired as the director of research for the American Dental Association in 2011 and moved here to Bisbee. And that culminated about 30 years spent in public health. I started out actually working with Dr. Toole in the office here for 3 years, and I was one of those dentists that made visits to public schools to give free exams to the kids. And this brings up the question of why put it in the water. Yes, people can choose healthy diets, fluoridated toothpaste, and all of that. But the poorest among us don't do that. They don't have that benefit. In fact, a lot of times they don't have the education or the finances to be able to afford it. This really is a public health measure. It's the community having a big enough concern for the poorest among us to take a public health measure which benefits them more than anyone else. Because 80% of the dental cavity problems in the United States is all found within about 20% of the population. I started out after working with Dr. Toole, but before I get off on that, when I did those exams to Bisbee school children who came from, you know, all of the rural areas as well as the town, it was hard. That was before water fluoridation. It was heartbreaking. As a healthcare professional, it was really heartbreaking to see the kind of pictures that Dr. Simpson showed in a 5-year-old child, in a 7-year-old child, who came in and had absolutely every tooth in their mouth decayed badly, to where they would have had to been hospitalized to actually receive the dental treatment they would have needed. And I also served in Marine Corps recruit depot, and I saw 20-year-old Marine recruits come in from every part of this country. And it was really true that all of the problems were in a small percentage of the people. And you could identify what localities these people were coming in. Now, again, that was back in 1980. That was just when things were getting started. It's gotten better since then, but it's still pretty much the same. So for me, it's a public health issue. And as far as ingesting it versus topically, actually the tooth buds are forming in baby teeth, even in utero. So those teeth are being strengthened as they're developing, or strengthened in terms of being resistant to dental decay. And actually, the wisdom teeth don't, the enamel on the wisdom teeth aren't really formed completely until 12 to 15 years old. So that whole time, you're getting the benefits of the ingestion of that level of fluoride versus the topical application. Once children are born, most of their baby teeth and even parts of their permanent teeth on some of them are already pretty much developed. So even if you started adding topical fluoride to teeth as soon as they erupt, you wouldn't get exactly the same benefit. Other than that, and if you have any other questions, I could probably answer them, but it's really for the children and the poorest among us. That's what it amounts to. Everybody else can basically find other methods to take care of their teeth if they really want to.
Thank you, John Kuhain. That concludes the various people that we have signed up, but I'm always very liberal. If somebody else needs to say something, they're certainly welcome. A new person, actually. Well, come on up. Just come up and state your name and So the clerk's office has a record of it.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Terry Kibler, and I'm a public health dental hygienist here in Cochise County. I work with our federally qualified health center, but I'm not here speaking for the health center. I'm here speaking from my own experience. This is kind of how I start out with all of my kids and my parents, because I see a lot of kids in Douglas and Wilcox and Elfrida. Well, germs, they eat what we eat, and they poop acid in our mouth. That's what they do. This acid quickly degrades the tooth enamel and breaks the bonds of the mineral structures that help hold the tooth together. When there's fluoride present in low amounts in the diet of a child that has forming teeth, the bonds in the teeth that are formed are stronger than when there's only calcium, and that makes for stronger teeth. In Cochise County, our diets are fairly high in citrus, which is acid, and carbohydrates, which is germs' favorite food. We all know that. The more we feed the germs their favorite food, the more they produce acid on the tooth, making more cavities, which are just holes in the teeth. Holes in the teeth cause pain, bad breath, and changes in the nutritional choices for the child that's suffering. A child with a toothache will tend to choose soft foods and soup to eat. Our parents tell us this all the time. All the time. What is your favorite, you know, foods? Oh, he likes macaroni and cheese and soup. That's what they eat. That's what they'll choose to eat. A child will be in too much pain to choose apples and carrots and other crunchy foods for their diet. This can lead the child to become deficient in nutrients needed to grow and be healthy enough for school. A child with a toothache will miss school. In fact, children will routinely underreport toothaches to their parents because they don't want to get in trouble. And when we finally see them, many times the damage is extensive, expensive, painful, and even unrepairable. That picture that Dr. Simpson had, I see that every day, lots of times, every day, every day. It's so sad. And let me tell you, although fluoridated water will not solve all of the community's teeth problems, it will inexpensively be there to help form stronger teeth for our children. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any other speakers? Is there any questions or comments from the council?
I have just my closing comments on this. I think it is absolutely essential that we keep fluoride in the water. As we heard after professional in the dental industry, they're all saying it is very important, especially for children, to keep that fluoride in the water systems, and I totally agree with that position. And so I've stressed out over the last 3 or 4 days over this issue because I was afraid this council would take the fluoride out of the water and put children at risk in this community. And every family with children in this community should be very aware of what went on here tonight and should be thankful for the professionals that came in here and explained the life that they live every single day and what they see and experience every single day. I am going to read a statement from the current Surgeon General of the United States, Vivek Murthy. And he says this was this year. Over the past 70 years, community water fluoridation has contributed to dramatic declines in both prevalence and severity of tooth decay, leading the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to name it as one of the 10 great public health achievements of the 20th century, alongside immunization, family planning, tobacco control, and motor vehicle safety. Water fluoridation is the best method for delivering fluoride to all members of the community, regardless of age, education, income level, or access to routine dental care. Fluoride's effectiveness in preventing tooth decay extends throughout one's life, resulting in fewer and less severe cavities. In fact, each generation born over the past 70 years has enjoyed better dental health than the one before it. Our progress on this issue over the past 70 years has been undeniable, but we still have work to do because we know that so much of our health is determined by zip code rather than the genetic code. That's why creating a culture of disease prevention through community efforts and ensuring health equity for all is one of my priorities. And so that is from the current Surgeon General of the United States, Mr. Vivek Murthy. And that's the end of my comments. Any other comments or Council Member Dunn's leaning forward?
Okay. Just several comments. Certainly the during my lifetime, certainly fluoridation of our water has dramatically reduced tooth decay. And I certainly have benefited from that. And I certainly want to thank Dr. Toole, who certainly came forward back when, and certainly the city council at that time, who voted with the support of Arizona or the American Dental Association, et cetera, to provide fluoridation in our water. Certainly a number of people have quoted the Center for Disease Control in terms of the importance of fluoridation. I also see that since that time that we do have more alternatives in terms of receiving fluoride, whether it's toothpaste or mouthwash, dental treatments. Also, we're more aware today of allergies, which we did not before, in terms of people having chemical sensitivity to different chemicals. And we're also seeing fewer cities who are actually putting fluoride in water, and certain studies indicate that the differences between those cities that do and do not in terms of incidence of tooth decay is not great. We certainly in this community, as a public decision, have, if the citizens feel it's time to stop putting fluoride in the water, we certainly, it's the role of this public body to move that forward. I am somewhat troubled with some of the, what I would call reactionary statements that were made here this evening. We certainly have moved from the impacts of chronic exposure to implying that that is the dangers of proper exposure to chemicals. Certainly during this period of time, we have, thank goodness, more labeling requirements, and any pharmaceutical, any chemical now carries proper instructions in terms of its use and indicates what are some of the possible ramifications of improper use or exposure. This morning when I took my vitamin C tablet, I read, and it's a surprising long paragraph outlining the risk of vitamin C in chronic exposure and excessive use. This is probably an inappropriate comment, but it even caused me to think about maybe we need to have an announcement at the start of every city council meeting on what excessive exposure to city council meetings might do in terms of high blood pressure, possibly even brain damage. I guess I'm troubled with some of the analysis here in that, and I particularly, I guess I oppose the ordinance as it is presented to us that we put a moratorium on use of fluoride until we investigate further. Certainly we've had a lot of scientific input here this evening. The idea almost is implied when we say, well, this is toxic, we're using a toxic material, we're dumping this in the water, there's a safety issue. It implies that somehow there's some intentional wrongdoing between the water company and the dental association and others. I mean, I have to assume that with the guidance that's provided to the water company in terms of how do you properly place fluoride in our water, that this is based on a scientific basis, and the Arizona Department of Health or whoever oversees this prescribes these, and that our Arizona Water Company is performing those properly. There certainly are a number of other chemicals, if you move around in terms that we use, that are indeed toxic in high dosages. As I indicated in terms of the ordinance before us, I certainly would vote for either way, of taking action, take no action, or if we want to move this forward to the to citizens, it can be placed on a ballot, or if we move forward tonight and make a motion to remove item, what is it, 9.6, to rescind it.
9.5.
That certainly would come back to us in a month, I believe it is, in terms of our second vote, and certainly there will be time then for citizens to clearly express their personal views for or against. I'm not quite sure what further study will do. I think we've certainly been provided some expert advice here this evening. I'm comfortable with that. I'm also very comfortable with what Arizona Water Company is now doing is proper and is safe. I believe that Arizona Water is providing water in some communities without fluoridation. Is that correct? So indeed, it is our choice, and it is Arizona Water's, they're at our mandate as to how we choose to move forward with this.
Some more comments.
Council member comments.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm not a lawyer, but the words can, this compound can cause and it may cause, that's the language, and it's the MSDS, if inhaled, well, if you inhale enough hydrogen dioxide, you're going to die. And they call that waterboarding. I mean, if you inhale water, you're going to die. If we expose ourselves to too much of anything, it can kill us. If there's paint on your house, it's going to off-gas. And while I'm putting it on your house, I'd be damned if I didn't wear a mask. And we do that every day. Anything that we do to excess will harm us. A couple of questions, and they don't need to be answered here, but if that $7,000 a year that we spent on fluoridating the water, how far would that go on a school? Getting out to schools, and how could we spend that differently to avail that to somebody? So it's not all one way or the other. The 80% of the problem is in 20% of the population. It's irrefutable. It's empirical. That's data. From what I heard in the beginning, and what the scientists, the doctors, the MDs, DDs, DDAs, DDMs, how do you get that fluoride in vitro to a child who is that irrefutable too? I think I'm listening to people speak to me, And it was dramatic and it worked, but you didn't go down everything that can, like I said, you can also suffocate by having too much air blown into your mouth. I mean, you can drown a fish, you can drown a shark by moving him too quickly through the water because he can't get the oxygen out of the water. You can do the same thing with a human. You put your head out of a jet, you're not going to be able to breathe because the air is coming too much. I mean, if you just expose yourself to too much, I am in agreement with that. And perhaps there is a better delivery system. But how do you deliver it to unborn babies? How do you deliver it to the kids that really need it? I think that I think I would prefer to leave it the way it is, table this, or put a moratorium on it. I don't know what the fluoride levels are, naturally occurring in the Bisbee water, but I'm sure that Arizona Water has that number. Again, I don't need to have that. I don't need to know how much $7,000 is going to be able to educate kids at Greenway and Naco and, Lowell or even at the high school. I don't know what the current level of the water, the fluoride, existing naturally in our water is. But it's not, I don't think it was intended as some sort of forced medication, even though it's interpreted that way from some people, but it is a public health issue. It's why we get sick when we drink water when we go to Turkey or parts of Mexico, is because our water is so pure, it's so, clean of those probiotics. And I'm not saying that, too much is better. I don't even need to say that, but more needs to be expressed to me at this point before I would say, remove it. But I'm not against being persuaded. But it needs to be more science and more data, because that's the only way you make an intelligent choice. Is based on data. We can do guts, we can do our gut reaction and, intuitive thinking, and sometimes it's right, but if it can be repeated over and over in a lab, then I would be a lot more comfortable at absolutely, moving right now to just remove it from the water. We got anecdotal, not anecdotal, but and I read the things that were sent to me, but this MSDS is just in the event you it's too much, this is what you do. So that's exactly what a manufacturer's safety data sheet is. It says, if this happens, do that. If that happens, do this. And try to avoid doing that. So I hear it. Maybe this is outlived, or it's gone its course, and maybe we don't need to be delivering fluoride in the water, and the delivery system is best with the toothbrush, but developing children, and I heard everything that everybody said tonight. How do we deliver that? IV? I don't know. I'm not afraid of making a decision, but I don't have all the data that I need to make an educated guess. And I'm not going to guess on this. Thanks. Thanks for the time, Mayor.
Councilmember Hansen.
I think I have more questions now than I did when we started. My main concern is the community safety. And I just don't feel that we have enough information as far as, for instance, yes, there is fluoride naturally occurring in water. Well, is that any different, or is adding the sodium fluoride different from the natural? Why does CDC have tips on infants and young children who are drinking fluoridated water? We don't know what is in the sodium fluoride. We do have the MDSD, but again, that's the chronic. So what are the effects of what is being put into the water? So that we can even look at whether or not the benefits outweigh the risk. That is really what I'm looking for, and it is a minimum, I would like to see the amount go down to that 0.7. But there's just a lot of questions that I still have, and I am concerned about the safety of the community, because it bothers me when you go to the Univar? I'm really bad with names and
Univar.
Long words. You can't find an MDSD.
MSDS,
thank you. Which basically is what this is, and then when you do get it, it's talking about the chronic. It's talking about the handling of large amounts of it. But it doesn't say anything, there isn't anything that's telling us what is going on with the amount that is put into the water system. And that's basically what I would like to know before we went any further.
Your Honor, may I supply a definition? I think there's some confusion over the term chronic.
No.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure what I did. Some of you have of chronic, but chronic is precisely a dosage delivered over a long period of time. That's all it is. So the SDS does indeed address the effects from long-term use.
But it doesn't tell you the amount.
Well, no, it's talking about chronic dosage, so therefore it's the normal dosage that a standard person would have over a long period of time. The dosage is presumed to be a typical dosage. Okay. It's long-term use. Chronic means just long-term.
Thank you. Jeff Harris. Any other comments or questions from the council?
Well, the definition is, it was fine, and it was, but it doesn't explain the short-term dosage and actually, you know, it does. There were some percentages on unborn children and their, you know, youth. There are some empirical numbers there. So, again, you know, if it's a matter of when do we stop, and I know there are people, the ilk, that it should never be there. We should not be introducing it, you know, synthetically or, you know, artificially. But, you know, the...
Well, and that's basically my concern, is that it builds up in the body from what I heard. And so what is chronic then as it's building up over time, especially in young children? Because they're more susceptible to it. And those are the questions I would really like to get answers to.
They're also susceptible to the benefits of it, too. So.
True, but are the risks more than the benefits?
When therein
that's,
is the
that's exactly the what I'm, like, that's what I want to know.
And I do,
and,
too.
Yeah.
And I do, too.
Mayor, do we have
Councilmember.
Experts here who can respond to the questions raised by Councilman Hansen?
Mr. Kuwain?
Keenan.
Seems like.
I'm sorry, I have something from the American Dental Association.
Okay, come on. Maggie Kuhanek, once again.
That was Kuhanek. Okay, I kept hearing a lot about whether infants should have fluoride. And this is from the American Dental Association Council on Scientific Affairs, and it says from birth to 6 months, there should be zero fluoride given to these children. Zero fluoride. 6 months to 3 years, 0.25, and 0% for pregnant women. So if there's one reason why fluoride can harm at any time, and we did talk about at-risk population here, which the dentist never brought anything up about, our at-risk population. The elderly people that are getting fluoride over that chronic period of time, people that have diabetes, people that have kidney failure or any of those problems, joint stiffness, that is the chronic, that's what's listed on that bag that is caused from chronic use of fluoride. And this, I think, is really important. I wanted to give it to you because you were thinking that it was important to have in as an infant. And the American Dental Association on this paper is saying zero fluoride should be. And I will give you the...
What's the date of that study?
It was done on 1994. So I highlighted that information.
Thank you.
Dr. Simpson, would you want to respond to that?
That
data from the American Dental Association means additional fluoride. In other words, I'm not going to prescribe any additional to that infant. But their background, they already have some in the back in the, from the even a low level of water. There's no additional prescribed fluoride.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Dr. Simpson? Councilmember Dunn has
you're,
a question.
You're from Sierra Vista?
Yes.
Arizona Water provides fluoridated water in all of Sierra Vista?
No.
And what are your experiences as a result of that?
We have a higher rate of decay than we would if it was all fluoridated. The problem is we have multiple water companies, and so it's difficult to get them together. The fort fluoridates. Every U.S. military installation with children living there has fluoridated water, so they receive the benefits of it. And if the Arizona Water Company would be willing to, it'd be great.
So that is your personal experience in operating in Sierra Vista, having a dental practice in Sierra Vista?
Yeah, I prescribe fluoride for my patients that don't get it in the water. So unless they're in Bisbee or they've got happen to have a high well water, I prescribe it for them. And it only produces mottling or fluorosis when they get too much from other sources. Like they're using a long thing of toothpaste and they're swallowing it, you know. So when they're under six, they swallow everything in their mouth, so you don't give them much additional fluoride when they're under six. But the mottling is very minor that I've had in that. Or fluorosis is a more modern term.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Simpson. No, I would love to have you come up. I was just hesitating because I'm probably going to get your name wrong again. Yeah. John Keenan.
People have known me for years and get it wrong. But, you know, I understand.
Come up to the podium.
Sorry.
Yeah. We have a TV audio audience as well.
Oh. I understand your concerns, Mr. Connors and Ms. Hansen, that you raised as far as evaluating the data. And actually, for members of the community, for everybody, but especially for y'all, you know, I understand the responsibility that you have and that you want to protect the safety of the community. And I think the only thing I could say is, and I hate to say it this way, but it really comes down to how much you trust the scientific community and the experts. Because I could give you, you know, I could pull out publications from the internet and from bogus researchers and from very valid researchers. I could dump all kind of research articles on your desk. And you wouldn't have the expertise to be able to evaluate the scientific merit of any one of those by itself. And what y'all are doing here tonight, those panels that I have referred to that have met numerous times, at the Centers for Disease Control, at Health and Human Services in Washington, D.C., at the FDA, at, you know, those panels, they bring in experts from all over the country who have spent their whole life evaluating scientific articles. And there will be maybe, you know, 15 to 20 scientists who have spent all their life doing this kind of stuff sitting at a table like this, hearing the same kind of opinion, research, everything, and they all get a vote and make recommendations, and those are the recommendations we have from the American Academy of Pediatricians, from the American Medical Association, from the Health and Human Services, from the Surgeon General. So, you know, while I understand the weight of responsibility and how you want the data, all I can say is really you're going to be over your head in terms of trying to really fairly evaluate the scientific data. And it's like going to a doctor when you have a disease, you know, a cancer or something like that. You can treat it on your own if you choose to. That's a matter of choice, and everybody has that choice. But most people kind of rely upon their lifetime of experience and training and expertise to, you know, kind of lead them. And so basically, that's how I would answer that question.
No, I would like to comment.
Let me go to, I'm going to, I'm going to go to Councilmember Connors first, then we'll go to you, Mr. Harris.
Thanks, John. May I call you John?
Yeah, please.
Okay, thanks.
It's easier.
Call me Gene if you want.
Yeah.
So the JADA volume 126, June 1995. Is there maybe something that's more current?
Oh, yes. Well, the latest...
with these specific, you know, issues?
Well,
and
no, that was referring to the amount of prescribed fluoride. Is that what...
Intervention fluoride supplementation.
Supplements.
Right.
Right. So that's talking about, given the level of fluoride in the water, it was... and actually... You also sort of have to remember one of the things taken into consideration in coming up with that was that the ratio, the percentage of infant's body that is made up of water is a much higher percentage than in an adult. So they're getting more water per gram of body weight relatively than an adult would. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason for saying no additional supplement should be given to an infant if they're in a water fluoridated area. Now, sometimes in non-fluoridated areas, fluoride is prescribed to people or in prenatal vitamins and things like that. But with the amount of fluoride that's available in water, no additional supplement should be prescribed in those cases. So it was given guidance to dentists on what they should do to prescribe fluoride as a medication.
Mm-hmm.
Councilmember Hansen.
The very first thing that it says is children 6 months to 16 years of age living in areas with less than optimally fluoridated water. For example, home or primary water supply is fluoride deficient, and then it gives the amount that you still should not give any supplementation on that. So, if they have enough fluoride, I mean, this is saying that they shouldn't even from birth to 3 years should not be getting any.
Yeah, the amount in prescribing fluoride, again, it gets down to a dose concentration, and you just don't want to over-prescribe,
right.
So you want to err on the side of safety.
And that's
panels of scientists come up with these recommendations, basically, to guide the dental professionals themselves in their own practice,
right?
But also as a guideline for the public, because the American Dental Association serves both practicing dentists as well as the American public as a public health organization.
Right.
So those are on the website in public space so that people would know if they wanted to go and look it up what they should do. Also, another reason for that is we did this in the laboratory at the ADA while I was there. We measured the amount of fluoride in infant formula, and it can vary quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, we don't want to prescribe any additional fluoride because we just can't be certain of how much fluoride an infant is actually ingesting. But the recommendation, but the CDC, when it makes its recommendation of 0.7 parts per million in water, takes all of those things into consideration and errs on the side of safety. That's why their most recent recommendation actually reduced it from 1 point to 0.7. Because now, with the number of decades that we've been using it, with it in toothpaste and everything like that, it's much more available in the environment than it was back in 1970 when all of this started. And they monitor that, the water fluoride, the natural fluoride concentrations in communities all over the country on an ongoing basis. And
basic.
You answered the question I was going to ask you.
Thank you.
Mr. Harris, Jeff Harris.
This is a copy of the petition sheet. I want to agree with the last speaker when he said that the technical issues are over the head of the council. I believe he's correct. This is not a matter for the council to decide. The council should not be in the business of medicating the community. This is, once again, a matter of choice. There were 400 people, roughly, who signed that petition who asked to be heard. This is a large number of residents. They're asking that they alone be allowed to decide what medicine they're going to receive. They do not want the council to do that for them. This is not a big brother society, I would hope, where the council gets that right to make medical decisions for its residents. This is crazy. And I do believe that Councilman Hansen's interpretation of that one clause was spot on. It puts the lie to this nonsense that that report is only talking about additional fluoride. It clearly points out that the definition of supplemental fluoride includes fluoridation. That is called supplemental fluoride. And so it is, what you read clearly points to the fact that children under 60 months of age should receive no supplementation, including from fluoridation. Thank you.
Any other?
Should we make?
Go ahead, Councilmember Connors.
I'm not, it's a public, this is a public issue. It's not, we're publicly elected, and this happened to be up here in front of us, and like chlorine, I'm sure we could do without that, and, but I don't know what the outcome would be. I know, again, like I stated earlier, I know what the outcome was when I was somewhere where it wasn't, they weren't being medicated by their governments like we are. And, excuse me, but it's not an easy decision. We're just dealing with this issue. We didn't create it, this body. We're just tasked with taking care of it. And I personally need more. I could say drop it down immediately to what at .07, get the titration or get the whatever, figure out where the fluoride is, do a titration and find out where it's at, and if we even need to add any at all. Thanks.
Any other comments or questions from the council? Well, I guess I will suggest that if there's no other comments or no motion made, I would say that, Councilmember Hansen. Yeah.
Can we do a motion or change the motion to adding or to dropping it to 0.7? I can't remember which point. To 0.7 rather than the 1.0.
I believe
at least do that, and then look at the rest of this information as to whether or not we want to keep the fluoride.
That 0.7 is a suggestion. Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe it's from the United States Department of Health and Human Services and the CDC. Is it from both of those?
And okay. We had also gotten a letter from the Arizona Water Department about a year ago, I think, on it.
Let me just double check. I'm certainly sure that we can do that. Ms. Orduña,
can modify, whoever makes the motion can make it however they want.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, I move that we drop the amount from 1.0 to 0.7 for the fluoridation of our water.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any more comments or questions?
I have.
Councilman Sullivan.
I just find it very interesting that all of the sources that are listed as reasons for fluoridation and all of the folks that speak for the fluoridation are all coming from American resources. When you look at the world as a whole and when you look at oral health as a whole, the United States is fluoridating more than any other place in the whole world. Yet, we are still fighting cavities just like everyone else, and places like Africa have great teeth. The problem isn't fluoride. The problem is our diet and the sugar in our diets and teaching our kids and giving our kids the right food. I just don't think it makes sense to continue to treat a problem with a chemical or medication that has other side effects. And America is known for this. We all take more medications than anywhere else in the world. And all of these medications have tons of side effects. And guess what? More people die in the world from medications and their side effects than they do of other stuff. Iatrogenic disease. I'm just highly against this. I think that the cause of the cavities is not being treated. We're treating it for the whole public health, and there are other repercussions that are happening with people's health. The amount of osteoporosis and arthritis have gone up since the 60s. Those are known to be associated with the fluoride calcifying the bones, calcifying the joints. And we're just looking the other way while the American Dental Association tells us that this is the right thing to do. I don't know why. That's what they're being told. And somehow there's always money involved. So I'm sticking with my original intent tonight, and I really don't think we should be fluoridating. We are one of the only places in Cochise County that fluoridates. If the cavities are really that much less in Bisbee, I want to see hard facts that say that. But I don't honestly believe that that's the truth, because if you look at the statistics around the world, cavities are going down at the same rate throughout all the countries that are developed, and most of those countries aren't fluoridating. So even though I think that it probably can help topically, and I'm not saying not to do that, and I'm not saying that the dentists are liars, I'm just saying we shouldn't be mandating this in our public water. It's a resource that everyone has a right to drink clean, pure water, and we're putting something in it that we don't have 100% surety of. And the fact that there are hundreds of thousands of conflicting research papers, and I have looked through databases from my school that are peer-reviewed and that are certified, and I'm not just looking at the CDC, because if you look at the CDC, they're all going to tell you the same thing. You have to do your research, and you have to look outside of your little bubble and find out what's really going on. You can't always believe what mass media and what all these organized organizations are telling you to believe.
Mayor?
Councilmember Thomas.
You know, to that, I heard every word, and I agree with you, but it needs to be apples and apples. And, if we're going to be testing fluoride in a stoic, in an environment that is absolutely free of everything, which it isn't, because you just, alluded to a health epidemic. It's what we eat, and it's the way we behave. But to compare our statistic to Italy's or Greece's or another or Africa, where their diets, everything is totally different. The way they consume and what they don't consume. So that data is going to be skewed in that
with, you know, being being devoid of or being uninfluenced by Mountain Dew and, you know, high fructose corn syrup and, you know, Halloween and, you know, on and on and on, unless they behave the same way we do gastronomically or, you know, that then we could compare things. But it's diet, and it's almost always, it's our element, it's what we are doing.
Exactly. So when do we start treating the problem instead of just the symptom? You know, it's like we just say, okay, well, that's our problem. We succumb to all the dietary problems, and in order to treat it, we're just going to keep covering it up with the fluoride Band-Aid. I think if Bisbee wants to be special and help their public to have better oral hygiene, then let's take that $7,000 and do a healthy eating campaign and or provide something for the kids besides just letting them continue to develop bad habits and osteoporosis.
Does anything else lend itself to, you know, exacerbating osteoporosis, or is it just fluoride?
No,
is fluoride the only culprit in osteoporosis?
No.
So that needs to be weighed, and that needs to be that number to, you know, because I'm telling you, if we don't drink water, we're going to die, however form we get it into. But if we take on too much water, we're going to die. So, you know, we're going to die from it, or it's going to keep us alive. And there's no denying the benefit of high hydrogen dioxide. You know, we can call it a chemical, a mineral, if we want to be talking in specifics. You know, and sometimes, you know, dramatically. And I get it. I understand what I saw tonight. You know, I get it. But to cut our nose off to spite our face because of what we're pretty sure is going to happen over chronic exposure to it, we're pretty damn sure. But, you know, a minute in 1,000 days, an inch in 23 miles, you know, 0.7 parts per million. I mean,
so my question is then, if we're not supposed to expose infants to any additional fluoride, according to the paper that we just saw, and children 1 to 3 years old, then those poor people that live in our community who have babies and they're making their formula with tap water, we're exposing them directly against the recommendations of that paper that we just read, which is the guidelines. So how are we supposed to...
This is 20 years old, though. Is there a newer one? And is the number changed? Has it gone up?
Well, we don't have any of that proof here tonight. What we do have is that paper there.
Right.
Yeah.
So based on this, we're, you know, you would really like us to make a decision based on everything
according
that we've heard.
According to the ordinance that we have here that I'm trying to... propose, it says that all ordinances, parts of ordinances, resolutions, or parts of resolutions in conflict with the provisions of this ordinance or any part of are hereby repealed. Then number three, if any section, subsection, or portion of this ordinance is for any reason held to be invalid or unforeseeable in the decision of any court or competent jurisdiction, such decision shall not affect the validity or enforcement. Okay, that's not what I'm looking for. Sorry. Back to the top. Basically, it says, it's a suspension until such time as each and every manufacturer of the fluoridating chemical supplied to the water utility for fluoridation of the municipal water supply provides to the city the following for its consideration: an accurate list of all contaminants and their amounts accompanying each batch of fluoridating chemical supplied to the city's municipal water supply. Number two, a detailed toxicological report on the fluoridating chemical. And three, a written statement verifying the fluoridating chemical's safety for ingestion once introduced into the water supply by all consumers, including infants and elderly. there was something here that says that it was severable if those... here. An ordinance of mayor and council of the city of Bisbee, Cochise County, state of Arizona, suspending Chapter 9, Article 9.5 of the city of Bisbee Code entitled Fluoride in the City Water System and providing for repeal and severability. So it provides for repeal and severability.
Mayor, can I ask Andy Hradek a question, please?
Certainly.
Thank you.
You want to go up to the podium,
what you just
Mr. Hradek?
Mr. Hradek, how quickly could we get answers or that information with the severity, you know, what's a reasonable amount of time to get that all the information that's Councilmember Sullivan just rattled off in
they've had since May, I asked for this information.
Well, and I'm asking him on the record in front of everybody now. What's a reasonable amount of time to have that information in hand?
You mean test results of what's in the water?
Test results of what's in the water. The newest everything that's in the fluoride, everything that Councilmember Sullivan just rattled off, and you know, what's a reasonable amount of time?
You know, I don't know, because some tests for water, for E. coli, and when we test things, some of those tests take 48 hours. Some of those tests take weeks. So to take a bag of fluoride and to take it to a lab and break it down, we have a scientist here who could probably tell you better, Mr. Connors, but it could take weeks or months.
We could also pay somebody to do it too, right?
Absolutely.
We could send it to Tucson. I mean, we would send things to Tucson.
And we do. And when we send out, it always takes a little longer because a mail-out lab has got a lot of stuff coming in. So it's usually about 30 days for anything else that we send out. We wait for things in wastewater about up to 30 days. But it would be hard to know because I can't actually give you – unfortunately, I can't give you a good answer because it's not something I deal with very often.
Right.
So a powder mix to find out what's in, I don't know. I actually don't know. I can't give you a good square answer. I'm sorry.
Would sending it out to a third party, you know, a private, would kind of would appear, you know, hands clean and you know, we've got nothing invested in this other than we just want to know what the heck's in there and,
sure,
you know, and exactly what's in it to,
sure,
the best of the measuring ability.
Yeah. You can send.
Help us make a decision on, you know, zero is the number, you know, that we want to add.
We can find a lab and send it out. Your call.
Thanks, Mr. Hradek. Ms. Kohanic?
Just a real quick, I think, hindered from here, is that around the United States, different cities and towns have been asking companies like Univar to send this information. And it's been happening over the last couple of years. They've been asking Univar or the product company like that to evaluate every bag and guarantee that it is safe. They are not getting any response from any company, not just Univar, but no company is willing to write a list out of what is in every bag. So they cannot assure the quality or the lack of arsenic or the problems with lead. They will not answer those letters. And no one has.
And Mayor, that's exactly why, you know, paying a lab in Tucson or wherever, Phoenix, to tell us what the heck's in that bag. Exactly. That's what they do. That's what those companies do, is, you know, give answers.
They need to assure it in every bag. I'm sorry. They need to know what's coming from China and where it's coming from. It's not just one bag, which is great.
Okay. We're getting a little bit out of order here. When you speak,
this.
You need to come up to the podium so people can that are listening can hear that. Any other comments?
Mayor, I guess my concern is, what would we do with the information if we sent this off to a lab? I mean, I think the conclusion is, are we adequate experts to assess that? And we're going to have the same debate as to whether this sample is indeed representative of every bag of this chemical that is distributed by the firm.
No, I'm talking about the bags that are in our possession.
Correct.
And okay, and if we had a list of, let's, you know, I'll be conservative, there's, you know, 30 elements in it. If there were a list and identified as exactly what they are and the way that they're going to measure this, is they're gonna weigh it, or they're gonna. This is what's in a teaspoon. This is what's in a cup or a pound of the Univar fluoride. But if they had a list of 30 minerals, chemicals, I've heard them called medicines. I've heard them called all kinds of things tonight. Then we could go back to science and say, okay, well, what does this have on, how does this affect us, and how does that affect us? We would have a more data, and it would make a difference, because we could ask a more direct and more succinct question, or say, is there another product that's purer, or is there something that's just simply fluoride? Does that even exist? It would help us make a decision. It would help me make a more informed decision. That's what it would do.
I don't know that I have the knowledge to assess that information.
Well, I can assure you I don't, but I could ask questions. And if they listed them out, then we send that questionnaire to, doctors, however. Where are these compounds? How are they affecting us now? It would help.
Any other comments? We have a motion and a second on the floor. Any other comments on this item, Ms. Coronado? I need a roll call vote.
Councilmember Connors.
May I clarify that this was was a motion and seconded to lower the amount until...
Yes.
0.7.
Aye.
Aye.
Councilmember Hanson.
Aye.
Councilmember Dowdy.
Aye.
Councilmember Dunn.
Aye.
Councilmember Sullivan.
Nay.
Mayor Early.
Aye. Motion passes 5-1.
Without objection from the council, I think we probably need a 7 to 10 minute recess.
Can I just say one other thing? I still, this is, to me, is still not a done deal. That was the first step, but I still would like this to come back so that we can have further discussion after we get more information.
And I am absolutely lockstep with Council Member Hanson. Okay.
And we have a petition from 400 people anyway, so.
Right.
Item number 6, discussion of possible approval of accepting a quit claim deed for a property located on Curb Street and a portion of the sidewalk on Tombstone Canyon from a citizen, parcel number 103-61-275C9.
Mr. Heretic, Public Works Director of City of Bisbee.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. What we're recommending here is we have a citizen in Old Bisbee who has been paying property tax for about 25 years on a street and a sidewalk that they don't actually own. They had a survey done for their property and realized they didn't own it. As we always do in the city, we then followed up with our own survey to verify what their survey said, and in fact, the citizen's been in control of Curve Street and the sidewalk on Tombstone Canyon and would like to give it back to the city so that they can go down to the county, because you pay for your property taxes by the square foot. So they'd like to relieve themselves of the responsibility of paying taxes on a city street and a sidewalk.
Thank you. Any questions from the council? Do we have a motion?
I move to accept a quitclaim deed for a property located on Curve Street and a portion of the sidewalk on Tombstone Canyon from a citizen, parcel number 103-61-275C9.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to accept a quit claim deed for a property located on Curve Street and a portion of the sidewalk on Tombstone Canyon from a citizen, parcel number 103-61-275C9. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously. Item number 7.
Mayor, may I just say that Mayor Porter will be very happy with the decision you all made today. He wanted me to keep his name out because he didn't want there to be any issue, but the truth is that's who this is.
You're very welcome, Jack.
Thank you.
Tell him thank you.
I wish I had known that.
Plus, I didn't say that.
Item number 7.
Discussion of possible approval to accept a quit claim deed from Mitchell Anderson for a property located near the Muheim House. Once again, Andy Heratic, the City of Bisbee Public Works Director.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. This is a piece of property. Mitchell Anderson moved to Bisbee about 14 years ago. He bought a little piece of property below the Muheim House that happened to be a lot that the Muheim's housekeeper lived in and had where she had her little house. That house burnt down about 25, 28 years ago. Mitchell bought the land, had it and went to the, came to the city, bought his land, went and got his deed. There have been some issues with the wall holding up between the Muheim house and Mitchell's house. We had a survey done, and there had not been a survey done on this property since it was split up. So there were no good survey markers. And when we did the initial survey, Mitchell owned about 5% of the wall, and the city owned about 90%. And this came up because the wall needs to be repaired. And we were in the middle of a battle of who's going to repair the 90 and who's going to repair the 5. And anyway, we had a survey done, and we redrew what the surveyors and the city attorney at the time, what we considered a fair boundary line. And to make this boundary line fair, what I'm asking is that we go ahead and quick deed this over because that wall needs to be repaired, and it's incumbent on us to repair that wall.
Any questions from the council? Do we have a motion? Councilmember Dowdy.
Is this down the hill, right down the hill from the Muheim property?
Yes, Councilman Dowdy. This is the little two-story house that's right below off Kerr Street. Yes.
Youngblood Hill.
Yeah, Youngblood, not Kerr.
That's okay. No, I'm only here to help.
I don't know what part of town I was in, sir.
Do we have a motion?
I move to approve, accept the quitclaim deed from Michael Anderson, Mitchell Anderson, for a property located near the Muheim House as described.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further thoughts? No further thoughts. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously.
Item number 8, discussion of possible approval to enter into a contract with VOS Heritage to complete an archaeologist survey in Tintown.
Once again, Andy Heratic, City of Bisbee Public Works Director.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. This is our ongoing project in Tintown. As you know, we finished the sewer project, and now we want to address the drainage project. There's a real drainage problem in Tintown. The grant that we're dealing with here for this money was applied for on our behalf through WIFA by ERR Engineering in Tucson. So in essence, SHPO is handling the grant money and also helping us manage this particular part of the study. So this money comes out of a grant that ERR actually applied for. The money then went to SHPO, and now we're dispersing that money to finish this project.
Any questions from the council? Councilmember Dowdy.
Andy, you said this would help the drainage?
The point of this study, Councilman Dowdy, is that we know that there's a drainage problem. They have a horrible drainage problem over there.
Right.
And what we need to do is figure out how to contain that water and handle it. So we're working on the drainage study. Unfortunately for Tintown, it's such an old inhabited site that it doesn't really have any sort of written history. We also know that in that site that it was settled by a group of Indians who came up from Mexico . So because of the site, because of the use of the site, SHPO and WIFA are asking for this archaeological survey.
Will it take care of the water that goes into the pantry?
This survey, or this archaeological survey, is for us to so that we can move forward with the drainage project. So we just got to get this little bit done, and then once this is out of the way, then we start the engineering. But yes, Councilman Dowdy, this entire project will include detention basins for water, curb and gutter, and underground drainage for 10 tons.
Okay.
That's what we're getting to by this, and it's about an 8-year project out. We're about 8 years out to finish.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
No? I move to approve to enter into contract with VOS Heritage to complete an archaeologist survey in Tintown. The survey is to complete the environmental review record ERR process. Total cost is $2,475.84.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve to enter into a contract with VOS Heritage to complete an archaeologist survey at Tintown. The survey is to complete the environmental review record EER process. The total cost is $2,475.84. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously.
Thank you.
Item number 9 we've already addressed without objection from the council. Before we go to item number 10, I would like to go through the city manager's report and a comment from Councilmember Hansen in the council comments. Mr. Marsh?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mayor and Council. Real quickly, I had a meeting, Andy and I, and also Ms. Flores, with the Mexican, the conflict for Mexico. And there's 4 areas that we discussed. One was the Arizona-Mexico Commission and tourism, trade and commerce, and event planning and coordination as a partnership moving forward. I'll update you as things move forward. We do have a follow-up meeting that he's scheduling for 45-60 days out. The second thing, I want to thank everyone that came to the business meeting. Let's head to the Royale. I want to thank Ryan for allowing us to use this facility. We had about 20 people there. In fact, the council and his delegation came to the business meeting, which I didn't realize that until actually that morning meeting. He said, hey, by the way, I'll be at your meeting that night. And we had a lot of great feedback, good comments from our business owners, and I want to thank everyone that came out and participated in that. Thirdly, I want to thank the mayor and the council for the opportunity to serve. I also want to thank our leadership team and our staff for all the hard work and dedication here for the city of Bisbee. I will address the comments that were made by Ms. Pullen. I don't mind issues when we talk about policy decisions, budgetary decisions, or administrative decisions, but when you make implication that I'm on the take by a developer, that's personal, and it's bigger than what she wants to deal with, and I will not sit back and tolerate that. There's meetings that she said I had with Scott Reese. There may have been not Scott Reese. He may have requested those, but the majority of the 3 of those were 2 with Planning and Zoning Committee meetings, which she failed to admit, public meetings. The third was another public meeting, where it was a work session with planning, our planning team. And then the other was with Andy and I regarding the airport. And then there was another meeting with Rob Page and also with Scott Reese. So to come across as if I've set these meetings up just with Scott Reese, it was deliberate, it was egregious, and it was not in good taste. And quite frankly, I did graduate from the University of Michigan, but I have no clue if Scott Reese graduated from there at all or not. But anyway, I didn't know it was going to be on the agenda. If I did, I would have had facts before you. And I know you don't question my work ethic. You all know I work hard. I work long hours. And so I thank you for that support.
Mr. Marsh, I thank you very much for that clarification on that issue with Ms. Pulling. I appreciate that very much. Thank you for your city manager's report. Councilmember Joe Hansen.
Thank you, Mayor. I just wanted to give a brief update on the paving schedule. San Jose is done. All of the streets that can be paved have been paved up to this date. Briggs will be finished tomorrow, and then next week we'll be starting on Warren. So, and we'll be concentrating, or they'll be concentrating because I'm not out there doing the hard work, from Arizona Street behind the City Hall. Those seem to be some of the worst streets that we have. I almost lost my car in one pothole. But anyway, so we're moving on, and it's looking really good to be done in a couple of years.
Thank you.
I'm giving you some extra time.
Thank you. Item number 10,
discussion and possible approval of a motion to go into executive session for the discussion of the employment evaluation of City Clerk Ashley Coronado per ARS 38-431.03 ARA1. Discussion or consideration of employment assignment, appointment, promotion, demotions, dismissal, salaries, disciplining or resignation of a public officer, appointee, or employee of any public body. Do we have a motion?
I move to go into an executive session to discuss the employment evaluation of City Clerk Ashley Coronado per ARS 38-431.03A1. Discussion or consideration of employment, assignment, appointment, promotion, demotion, dismissal, salaries, disciplining, and resignation of a public officer, appointee, or employee of any public body.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any other thoughts? No other thoughts. We have a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously. We will go into executive session now.
I didn't take it. I was sitting here talking to people.
Take your time. I'm going to step outside for a second.
Wrap it up.
Hey, Ashley.
What's the name of you, my friend?
Pretty good.
Thank you. I know it's getting cold out there already.
No problem. Yeah. Well, you know, it really puts it more in perspective for me, too, because, you know, you start listening, and it's just like you're pulled back and forth. So I appreciate it.
I'm ready for the day to be over.
Where have all the people gone?
I move that we come out of executive session.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to come out of the executive session. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously. We are now out of executive session. Do we have a motion? I move to increase the salary.
Go ahead.
I move to increase the salary of the city clerk, Ashley Coronado, by $10,000.
I second. Per year.
We have a
per motion. Year.
We have a motion and second. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion passes unanimously. Do we have a motion?
I move to adjourn.
I second.
We have a motion and a second to adjourn. All those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes unanimously. This meeting is adjourned.